Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Studio G and the Discussions for Women in Leadership, where we focus on how the styles and principles of an Omega leader can influence leadership. We will be back with you shortly to start this week's show in just a few minutes. Good evening and welcome to Studio G and Discussions on Leadership. Tonight, I am holding in my hands, fresh off of the press from Howard Books, division of Simon & Schuster Publishers, the book, Jesus Career Counselor, How to Find and Keep Your Perfect Work by Lori Beth Jones. We have Lori Beth in the house tonight, and we have Alisa Holston. Representing the education pillar. Welcome, Alisa.
Thank you. It's great to be here. And congratulations, Lori Beth Jones. The book looks beautiful.
Thank you very much. It's exciting to hold it in my hand.
What does it feel like, Lori? This process has taken quite the timeline to get to.
Yes. I turned it in a year ago, actually. It left my hands a year ago this time. So by the time I see it, you know, I'm already working on other projects again, so I'm sure that I will take it to bed with me tonight and lovingly turn each page and trembling in fear to see if there are any typos, what I should have said, what I didn't say, but it's always just a great feeling, and there was a lot of teamwork that went into this. So many decisions. It's like remodeling a house, except you can't live in it. So a great feeling.
What's the vision for this book? What's the sense that, you know, as you hold this and you look out over time, what's the vision you have for this, Lori?
Well, you know, I got an email today from someone who read it and said this is going to be another classic, like Jesus CEO. So I'm hoping that the ripple effect is that as a result of this book, that people of all ages will rethink what they came here to do, and are they really living their perfect work? I was talking to the former president of Christian colleges yesterday about it, and he said, you know, when he was president of all the Christian colleges in the United States, and he said the career counselors back then were like part-time people. Some of them were volunteers. And he said now the competition is so fierce that colleges are actually having to promise students that they will guarantee them employment when they graduate. So it has been a huge shift just in the time from he retired 3 years ago, and now career counseling is going to become almost mandatory because the cost of education is so high and the cost of not finding your perfect work is so deep.
Well, what's interesting for me is I hold this hardback cover. I love the book in hardback. You know, it just feels interesting. So as I hold my iPad, it's not quite the same thing, is it?
Turning the pages, the sound of the pages and the print, and to read it and to touch it and to mark it and to tab it and to enjoy it as a treasure, something that you can interact with. I think you interact with paper text a lot differently than we interact with digital text.
Exactly, but that iPad is something special. And by the way, just a plug for iPad, Jesus Career Counselor will be available both on iPad and the Kindle.
Yes.
So make sure that you get one or the other or all the above. So as I'm holding this, I'm looking at the title, Jesus Career Counselor, How to Find and Keep Your Perfect Work. You know, we often associate Jesus Counselor, right?
Right.
In a Christian history or in worship, you know, it's common for us to associate Jesus the counselor, Jesus the king, Jesus career counselor, though, you know. Interesting combination of words. How did that come to be, Lori, just even the title of this book?
Well, I think it's a natural outgrowth of really everything that I have done, from Jesus CEO to Jesus Life Coach to Jesus in Blue Jeans. It's, you know, as I said, I originally submitted it as the 12 dreams of the Holy Spirit, and the wise powers in the marketing department and the people who were familiar with my brand and the agent and attorneys and everything really looked at it and said, really what this book is about is helping people find their perfect work. So we renamed it, and I think it was a brilliant repositioning to address the need that everybody has today.
Mm.
It's, you know, your job, you spend so much time at work, and
right.
I was just looking at statistics today, how many businesses are family-owned, 80 to 90%.
Mm.
What's the implication of that for careers?
Sure.
If it's not your family, or if it is your family.
Right.
Women now contribute something like 23 million jobs a year to the economy. Are you ready to have a woman boss? Are you ready to be a woman boss? So all of these statistics are just fascinating snapshots of what is happening in the world of work. And it's not just about unemployment. You know, we have 9 to 10%. I think California's at 12% unemployment, and everybody reels from that.
Mm.
But that means that 87% are working.
Sure.
And the statistic that concerns me more is the people who are working, over half of which do not like their jobs.
Right.
So there's a huge misery index. Yes, it's critical when people are not working, they can't find a job. That's the hardship level. But there's also the painful level of people who are in the wrong place in work. So this is what I want to hope to do with the insights in this book, is to lift the stones out of the path for people at whatever age. There was just an article about 86-year-old, 90-year-old, 106-year-olds getting put back to work through this group called Experience Counts, because they, you know, it's human nature to need something to do. And to feel like you're contributing.
Yeah, to feel vibrant.
Yeah,
yeah. Totally.
Even little children, if you watch them on the beach, they'll build a castle or they'll start shoveling sand. They're not just going to sit there in their little rocking chair and stare at the ocean and think they've made it. They want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So that's in us. And how do we honor that? And I guess I take it that, you know, there's a heavy emphasis on salvation with the evangelicals. And for me, yes, you know, getting saved, very important, but unless you're raptured immediately, you've got a lot of time on this earth, and what are you going to do to go and be like Jesus?
Mm.
So this is what my heart is all about.
Wow. Hold on 1 second. We've got Vicky Arteaga joining us from afar this evening, as she is out there working in the work of the world. Welcome.
Don't believe
I'm just getting into the Studio G.
All right.
Well, we will...
I'll join you in a minute.
Okay. I guess you're going to hang up on us and join us live in the studio. So we'll talk to you in a little while. Thanks.
Okay.
So, Elisa, you were getting ready to...
I was going to ask a question, actually. Lori Beth, your story, I think, is a story about encountering one's path and merging one's skills, talents, and passion with one's work. And it's not been an easy path for you. So to hold this book in your hand is a manifestation. It's a conclusion. It is the omega experience in terms of finding what your true calling is. And I guess I wanted you to comment, maybe elaborate a little more. What does it feel like? Because not only is this a book that is the representation of hours and hours of research and thought and reflection, but it is also the manifestation, the tangible representation of your life's work, of your path, and of your mission. Talk to us a little bit about maybe your journey in terms of finding your path, your mission, and holding that book in your hand and how that represents it. How's that for you?
I can always count on you. To multi-layer the question. Well, in this book, I share more of the heartache and the raw failings that I have done than in any other book. I think there's a level of candor and honesty that goes much deeper than any of the other books. Some, you know, when you're talking about Jesus, it's easier to look at him. But in this book, particularly in the section on the mirror, I say, ooh, I had to look at me, you know. So there's a very raw part that is shared in this work. And to hold it, one of the things I share in the book that I think I suffer from a condition called anhedonia, which is not a person but a condition, which means the inability to experience pleasure. And I think a lot of us have that in this society, because I'm always on to the next project, and how can it be bigger, better, more, more, more. Mm-hmm. And to just take a moment and say, this, like you're framing for me right now, this book is real, and it's your heart poured out. With anhedonia, you never do take a moment to savor or pleasure. And you're always thinking it's going to be for someone else. So I'm going to take a moment, thank you, and just and savor this, what it means. And I wish I had known, you know, when I started out, what is revealed in these pages. I think it would have saved me a lot of heartache and probably the people all around.
What do you mean by that? Talk to people about that.
Well, I think that if I had realized, if I had understood the elements and grasped my personality type, it could have prevented a hurtful marriage. It could have saved my parents a lot of money they spent on education that I ultimately did not use. I had to find my own way, and I had to find it going backwards. Mm-hmm. And so it is amazing for me to be 57 years old and still be producing books that I hope are relevant to the times. And so it feels like almost a middle-aged baby. Who's going to raise this now?
What I sat today in my office speaking with a fellow principal, and being in education is in troubling times, and not only due to the economy, but also, you know, that famous pendulum of education is it swings right and it swings left, and the rules change for those of us that are engaged in education. I think education is very much a vocation for most of us that are involved in it, because it is thankless sometimes, and definitely the monetary or material compensation does not match the effort. But it's not about that. It's about the other return that one gets on that investment. And facing that, though, dealing with my staff and looking around at my colleagues and the times in which we find ourselves, and as that pendulum has swung right and it's much more directive and restrictive in terms of what we're to do and how we're to do it, a term I often hear is, this is not the gig I signed up for. I think I may have said that a few times myself in the last 18 months or so, and I was sitting with this colleague who's retiring, and he was definitely, it was his path. Being an educator was his path, and mm-hmm. he has no regrets, but he knows that this is not the gig that he signed up for. Mm-hmm. And a little bit of personal economic sacrifice, retiring a little bit early, he's ready to pack it in. What does one do when you know, I know you work very hard to separate one's path from one's career, but yet in Jesus Career Counselor, you're trying to help people merge one's career and one's path, but you don't, in your book, The Path, you don't want us to identify ourselves.
It's a job description.
By our job description, by our career. So I guess what insight would you have to that? This is not the gig I signed up for.
Well, Shelley, I think that's a perfect transition to one of the blog responses. Can you share that?
Yeah, talking to the one on your fan page that was talking about the challenge.
The calling.
Yeah.
Mr. Calling.
So the comment was, I think the challenge, or your tweet or your post this morning, Lori, was, I believe God places our calling in our hearts. Sometimes it's hidden or becomes distorted through time, disappointment, or misdirection. And then you had a few people comment on that, but one in particular commented, quote, I think the challenge is when you follow that calling and it doesn't work out, at least not in the timing or expectation that we have in mind, thus challenging to keep following it because of the doubt and disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to speak to that for us, right?
Right. Well, when you shared that in the pre-show, what struck me was read the part again where she says, I missed my calling.
Well,
when your calling doesn't work out.
Right. So whether it's not in the timing or expectation that we had in mind.
Right.
So you follow that calling and it doesn't work out,
either in timing or expectation.
Right. So this is a, I think it's really important to define the terms. And I do that in the first chapter of the book, a job, work, career, vocation, path, calling, all of those things. So really, you could never say that your calling didn't work out because you're still being called.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes what happens is that we confuse a job description with a call. And also in the intro to the book, which is something the media is kind of latching on to in these interviews that I'm doing, what do you mean Joseph got fired and people have been downsized in the Bible and David and, you know, so did Joseph miss his calling when he ended up in the well? He was called to be a ruler, but there he is in a well, and then he's being sold as a slave, and then he's in prison. And so your calling is something that is not attached to a job description. And I think that's very important for us to understand. You cannot miss it. God continues to call us. Now, if you get attached to a job description and say, God wants me to be a pastor, and then they fire you from the church, maybe you're not called to be a pastor. Maybe you need to be a baker, or maybe you need to be an entrepreneur. But it's really important that we not log on or link into...
Latch on.
Thank you. I'm using social media words. To a job description, because God is so much bigger than that, and we are so much bigger than that. And even with Jesus, when they were nailing him to the cross, they still couldn't figure out what to call him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And he never really told them, you know, who do you think I am? It's one of the most powerful questions in Scripture. So... and now we're being around, as Shelley, you and I go to these conferences, there are more and more people that they'll say, and now, author, speaker, consultant, spiritpreneur, entrepreneur, or for a lot of people,
sure.
Because it's not just one thing. We're multiple tasks. And I also talk about that in the book, that your job description is, I was writing it in the lobby of the La Jolla Valencia, and there was a sculpture on the stand. It was part horse and part fish. And I had never noticed it before, and I said, Lord, that is just the way I feel. Sometimes I'm a horse whinnying and calling people to come, you know, play with me, and the other times I'm fish hiding from the sharks, you know, just swimming to get away. So your job description is going to be like that. It's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. Now, what gig did that horse fish sign up for?
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's all about spirit and being. Everybody's getting excited. Hands are being raised. Okay.
So we're going to let Nikki speak first since I've
okay.
Thank you. I was I just came from a business mixer, and it was about Latin women in business, entrepreneurs, and I logged into the radio show when I was at the freeway and just listening to the statistics and all that. You know, it's really amazing when you go to these mixes, you realize that this economy is based on small business, right?
Yes.
And also, your last comment right now, when they ask you, so what do you do? You're like, well, I do a lot of things.
I do.
Exactly. And sometimes it's really hard to, especially if you're in transition, to say, well, I do... what with one word. I remember when I graduated from the university in international relations, my first job interview, of course, when you're studying, you think you're the best, right? Especially if you have great grades and all that. My first job interview, they asked me, so and what is an international relations specialist do? And I'm like, and, you know, it was hard to explain in a few words
right. What
you could do.
Right.
So, you know, yeah, it's just having a job like that or a title like that, it's not linked to your personality.
I'm sitting here thinking about titles as you're talking about them. You interviewed a few weeks ago, Lori, on your radio show, Reverend Mike Slaughter, who has written a book called Change the World. And his title as a pastor, I believe, if I have this correct, I might be a little bit off but on the exact wording, but I think it's chief creative officer or like chief thinker or, You know, so the titles that we've normally seen, like Reverend or Pastor or, you know, Chief Financial Officer or CEO, you know, I think those are starting to change. And I think people are actually beginning to wear their hat of their calling, right? Because they've become so focused and clear as to what they've been called to do in that environment or on that team or as part of that workforce. And so if this book is really going to change the way that we view careers, how do people that are career counselors begin to take this material and this kind of thinking and this mindset as they meet with junior high and high school kids that are transitioning into to college? Or how do you take a high school senior, I mean a college senior, who have spent their last 4 years of their parents' money, their time and energy, and partied for 4 years and are still not clear about what they're doing.
Right.
I mean, how do we begin to take a book like this and shift the thinking that, you know, my job is, you know, chief growth pattern, or, you know, I'm coming onto this Google team and I'm doing just this one thing, or I am working for Apple and I am doing this because I am the best at this. But how do you find this when the traditional ways of finding a career are take the survey, tell me something you think you're good at, pick one of these, you know, top 20 careers, or look at who's hiring now? How do we shift away, Lori?
Yeah, the challenge is that we really do have to shift a whole paradigm, and it's happening for us, so we might as well lean into it. The truth about Google is that they don't even have job descriptions half the time, and 20% of their time they're supposed to be working on a project that just excites them. It doesn't matter if it's in their department or not.
Or it doesn't even exist yet.
I'm meeting tomorrow with George Barna, and he describes himself, among other things, as a futurist and a provoker of thoughts. You know, so it's going to be a fun lunch meeting. The way that career counseling was developed, and I learned this from a book that I researched called You Majored in What? It's a great book. Career counseling was developed by an academic engineer who obviously was an earth, who believed that A plus B will equal C. And so because it was an academic earth pattern, and if you look at education, it itself is an earth structure.
No wonder I'm dying.
There you go. No wonder. But what they found is that when it comes to careers, many times A goes to Z, which comes back to L, and then you end up with P. And the example she gives in this book is Sally Ride, who started out, I think, on a tennis scholarship, and then got interested in math, and then got interested in science, and then next thing you know, she's an astronaut. How do you go from being a tennis pro to an astronaut? It was not her major. She was a sports major. So it's a combination of following your heart. And I've been writing two articles. Maybe we should make this as a download, Shelley, the top five rules for how to find your perfect work. Mm-hmm. But really, you have to step way back as a meta thinker and say, what did I come here to do? What is my personality hardwiring? What's my vision of my ideal day? What are my four greatest gifts? And then you go for a match. And then when you get clear about that, you, instead of going into a job interview trying to get plugged into an existing hole, you can say, you know, I've done research on your company or your industry, and I'm a wind fire, and I specialize in fast results. I'm a connector of dots, and I like to speak. I'm a really good speaker, writer. Could you use somebody like this to advance your organization?
Mm-hmm.
Totally, you know,
different approach.
And that's the way it's going to have to be in order to succeed. I was counseling a man last week, and he kept saying, well, I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop. He was having some bad performance issues at work, and I said, other shoe? He said, well, they're either going to fire me or reassign me. And I said, well, what's going to happen? He said, I don't know. And I said, when did you start being so passive about your future? Why are you letting them shape your future? They don't want to shape their future. That's why they brought me in to talk to you. They want you to shape your future. And it's going to happen by shaping up, you know,
right,
for one thing. But that attitude of just we're ping pong balls being hit back and forth, we are so much more than ping pong balls and reactors.
Mm-hmm.
get hit back and forth. But meta-thinkers say, let's stop this game and step away.
We've got just 5 minutes, Lori, and I want to make sure that we get to what we intended to talk about. It's all very exciting because this book is in your hands right now, and the release date is just around the corner, May 4th, that it should be in stores. What we said that we would talk about tonight is that you would share these three dream words that can help you shape your job, your career, and your future. So
right.
You just talked about shaping that. How do these 12 words inside Jesus Career Counselor help us to shape our job, our career, and our future? Can you speak to that for a few minutes, and then Elisa, you can maybe close us out.
She says, thanks for that. Well, I think I need to review what the 12 dreams are and categorize them so we can all remember them. There's three under each of the four elements. Under fire, you need to rise, to risk, and to roar. Under water, you need to renew, reflect, and restore. Under earth, you need to remain, return, and regenerate. And under wind, you need to revive, rejoice, and release. So imagine if a person was doing all of those things, they would be really productive, right? Now, the way that I wanted to talk about this in the show, and obviously we're going to have to do it in the next one, is for people to look at those 12 words, and we did this with Alyssa before Vicki got here, and say, which ones most resonate with you? So do you have time to just say what you thought?
Well, what was interesting was is that I'm a double fire, and so I immediately resonated with rise, risk, and roar. But ironically enough, water would be my opposite element, and so the three words for water were renew, reflect, and restore. And somehow that I was drawn to that. And you mentioned being drawn to your element, being drawn to your opposite element. Yet for earth, it's remain, return, and regenerate, and wind was revive, rejoice, and release. Not so much. So somehow there's something, I guess, profound, I think, that you're drawn to what your element is. Obviously, you're drawn to what your element is,
right.
what's natural
for you.
It's
your first response.
It's your first response. But there was something in my core that the renew, the reflect, and restore also resonated with me. I also find myself in a time of challenge. And so maybe part of my balance is seeking out the opposite of my element.
Right.
Part of that, I'm in a time where I need to balance myself out and to be more complete. So maybe that's why my spirit was drawn to those as well.
Yes, and that's what I'm asking people to do is what is your spirit drawn to? Because that is our first, and go deeper than your first response. You're going to automatically like the words that are most like your element. But if you step back and say, what do I really need right now? Many times I think you'll find that it's the opposite element, which
definitely
needs exploration because it is opposite.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the balance. So even in just, you know, it's kind of a quick diagnostic to say this is where I need to explore. So if you were sitting with me as a client, I would invite you to look at those words. What do those words mean? What's it like to reflect when you're under fire all the time?
Exactly.
What's it like renew yourself when you're under constant attack by unhappy coworkers or circumstances, and to remember God's promise to restore
right.
all things. And it's just a beautiful, that chapter on water and restoration is so beautiful for me too as a fire. So Shelley, do you want to close it out here?
Go ahead, Lord.
Well, I just want to say a prayer, and dear Lord, thank you so much for these dear friends that are sitting with me at this baby. And we pray that these words will fly forth like the wind to the people and the hearts that are hurting, who are lost, who are questioning, who are discouraged, who have forgotten that you care about the shepherd in his work and the widow in his work and in her work, and that you really do want us to be fruitful. You said in John that you, if we remain in you and abide in you, that we will bear much fruit. And so often we get distracted, and that leads to disconnection. So, Lord, I pray that this work would be like Ezekiel 47, which is a stream that becomes a river with fruitful trees on both sides, bearing fruit for food and leaves for healing, that it will make its way to the sea.
Thank you for people that work so hard to make this book happen. We release it now through you. Amen.
Thank you, Lori Beth. See everybody next week.
See you next week. Thank you for joining us.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hello and goodbye.